You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at rudolfsteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, steinerbooks.org in America and rudolfsteinerpress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collected works, volume 314 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Physiology and Healing, Treatment, Therapy, and Hygiene. And this is the third lecture in the second part of this, lecture 7 in the entire series, given in Stuttgart on the 27th of October, 1922. If we manage more and more to see the human organism in the way which, sadly, I have only been able to refer to briefly, things grow important specifically for judging the human being in sickness and in health, for the full value of some aspects is not generally apparent. To this day, people pay extremely little attention to the principle which I have tried to call, quote, the threefold state of physical human nature, close quote, in the appendix to my book, Von Seelenrätseln. It's a parenthesis, reader's aside, this is found extracts in The Case for Anthroposophy, end of reader's aside. Yet, very much indeed depends on people attaching the right value to this threefold state of the physical human being when it comes to the element of pathology and also to medical treatment. The threefold nature of the physical human being means that everything that is neurosensory system has to be seen as mainly located in the head, but that this head organization is also spread out over the whole human being. Everything we have to call neurosensory function in the human skin, for instance, and indeed in the whole human organization, is certainly part of it. But we cannot arrive at a well-founded view unless we first lift the neurosensory system out of the whole rest of the organism, doing so theoretically to begin with. The second system I distinguished is the human rhythmic system. It includes everything in the functional sphere that is subject to rhythm, primarily, of course, the respiratory system, in conjunction with the system of blood circulation. In a wider sense, also, the rhythm which applies, at least in the main, to human beings, even if they may break it up in many ways. This is the day and night rhythm, the rhythm of sleeping and waking. And furthermore, anything else that is rhythmic, including food intake, and so on. People do, of course, break the last of these, and the results of this have to be balanced out in a certain way, using regulators existing in the organism. We must then consider the rhythmic human being to be the second element in the human organization, and the metabolic organism as the third. I include the organism of limbs in this, for the functional processes due to moving our limbs are closely bound up with the metabolism in general. Considering this threefoldness of the human being, we come to see that the human organization I spoke of this morning, which is above all connected with the capital I, has a certain relationship to the metabolic human being. But this is in so far as the metabolic human being extends over the whole human being. The rhythmic human being has a certain relationship to the system of heart and lungs to which I referred this morning. And I also spoke of renal function this morning, arising from the renal system, having a certain relationship to the human astral organization. In short, the threefold human being has a certain relationship to the individual levels of supersensible human nature, and hence also to the individual organ systems, as I showed this morning. But we must take a closer look at these relationships if they are to be of real value in gaining insight into the human being in health and sickness. And it will probably be best to start with the rhythmic human being, the rhythmic organization of the human being. This rhythmic organization is very often not properly valued for one quite specific property, and that is the relationship between the rhythm of the blood circulation and the breathing rhythm. In adults, it is almost 4-1. This is, of course, an approximate, a mean ratio, and it is the very fact that it is specific to the individual which reflects something of the measure of health and sickness in the human organism. This ratio of 4-1 in the rhythmic human being really applies also to the whole human being. We certainly have a ratio of 4-1 with regard to the development of the metabolic human being, which includes the human being of limbs. I say, quote, metabolic human being, close quote, to simplify things, and the neurosensory human being. Again, this is something we can verify empirically from the evidence of the senses. The relationship goes so far that we may indeed say that everything by way of processes connected with human metabolism goes at approximately 4 times the speed of everything the neurosensory organization contributes to the human being's growth. We can actually say that the second dentition, with the second teeth permanent in the child, reflects what is happening in the human metabolic system due to the fact, as it were, that this metabolic system is all the time knocking against the neurosensory system, but that everything which then continues on from the human metabolic system toward the middle, the rhythmic system, relates to everything that extends from the neurosensory to the rhythmic system in a time ratio of 4-1. Putting it accurately, it is like this. We are able to see the rhythms of the neurosensory system continuing on in the respiratory system, and the rhythms of the metabolic system continuing on in the circulatory system. We can say that the metabolic system is sending its influences up, as it were, into the rhythmic human being. That is, the third principle in the human organization into the second principle. And in everyday life, this is reflected in the rhythm of the blood circulation. The neurosensory system sends its influences into the respiratory system, and this is reflected in the breathing rhythm. In the rhythmic human being, where we are able to observe the 4-1 ratio, about 70 pulse beats to 18 breaths, we have the neurosensory system and the metabolic system knock against one another in the ratio of those rhythms. And as I said, we can observe this also at any stage in life if we observe how absolutely everything that happens in the human being coming from metabolism knocks against anything coming from the head system, the neurosensory system. It is an extraordinarily important relationship. We can indeed say straight out, in the child's second dentition, we have the metabolic system pushing up as far as the head, but in such a way that when the metabolic system comes up against the neurosensory system, the latter is initially predominant. This will be clear to you from what follows. We are able to say that when children get their second teeth at around the age of 6, metabolic system and neurosensory system knock against one another in such a way that the activity of the neurosensory system is dominant. What results from the collision, these are the components, as it were, coming from the neurosensory and metabolic systems, is the situation which then leads to second dentition. At the stage of life, when sexual maturity develops, we see metabolic system and neurosensory system knocking against one another again. Now, however, the metabolic system dominates. In the male gender, this is reflected in the fact that even the voice, which up to this time mainly reflected the neurosensory system, changes because the metabolic system comes up, as it were, and makes the voice duller. We can understand these effects if we observe how much there is in them, on the one hand, of emanations that have their origin in the renal system, as mentioned earlier today, in the liver and gall system, and, on the other hand, those that originate in the head and the skin organization, that is, the very basis of the neurosensory system. It is an extraordinarily interesting relationship, something which takes us to the deepest depths of the human organization, as it were. We can really think of the development, the configuring of the organism, proceeding in such a way that emanations coming from, let us say, the kidney and liver system, are met by the form principles of the head system. To draw a diagram of what happens there, we would have to do it like this. There's a drawing, apparently. We would have to say, emanations of this kind come from the liver and kidney system, not only upward, but in all directions, of course, and have the tendency to act in a semi-radial way. But the form principles coming from the head blunt them everywhere. So, the shape of the lung can be understood if we think of it being fully formed out by principles coming from the liver and kidney system. But these are met by principles coming from the head system that round them off. The whole human form arises in such a way that we think of radial form principles coming from the liver, kidney and liver system and being rounded off by principles coming from the head system. This gives us the extraordinarily important fact, every detail of which can be proved empirically, that two power components are involved in organizing the human being, especially in their growth. The powers coming from the system of liver and kidneys, and those that come from the neurosensory system, round off the forms the others are configuring, giving them a surface. Both components impinge on one another, but not in the same rhythm. The rhythms in which they impinge differ. Everything coming from the system of liver and kidneys has the rhythm of the metabolic human being, and everything coming from the head system simply has the rhythm of the neurosensory human being. This means that when the individual is ready in his organization to get his second teeth in about his seventh year, he is in his metabolic organization. Everything coming from the system of kidneys and liver, and is impinged on, I'd say, by the heart rhythm, made subject to a rhythm which relates in a ratio of 4:1 to the rhythm which comes to meet it from the heart. It is only in their 28th year that human beings are as far advanced with regard to their head organization as they were at the age of 7 years, with regard to their metabolic organism. This means that the sculpting, modeling principle advances more slowly than the radial principle, which does not sculpt. It takes 4 times as long. Because of this, we are, by the end of our 7th year, about as far with regard to the principle coming from our metabolism as we will only be in our 28th year. With regard to the whole of our growth situation, insofar as it is subject to the neurosensory system. Human beings are thus complex creatures, with two streams, two movement streams, active in them that are subject to completely different rhythms. And we are thus able to say that second dentition, for example, arises when the principle connected with the metabolism impinges on the slower but more intensive sculpting principle. The sculpting element thus preponderates in the teething process. At the time of sexual maturity, the metabolic element is to the fore. The sculpting element withdraws, as it were, and in the male gender this is reflected in the well-known phenomenon. Other things in the human organization are also connected with this. One is that the potential for ill health is greatest in the years up to the second dentition, and this in such a way that the greatest potential for ill health exists in the very first stage of life. People's inner disposition for ill health largely ceases with the second dentition. I found I had to study this relationship very exactly, because we had to develop our system of education. You really cannot establish a rational system of education unless you base yourself on this knowledge of the human being in health and sickness. The inner nature of human beings is such that they are really at their healthiest in the second stage of life, from the second dentition to sexual maturity. There follows a stage where they will easily fall ill. But falling ill in the first stage of life up to the second dentition is essentially very different from falling ill once sexual maturity has been achieved. These two possibilities of falling ill are as different, I'd say, as the second dentition and the breaking of boys' voices. In the first stage of life up to the second dentition, everything in the child comes from the neurosensory organization, going to the outermost peripheries of the organism. Everything really starts from the neurosensory organization. This is still predominant at the second dentition, and the pathological phenomena in the first stage of human life arise from it. You will be able to form a complete opinion, if I may put it like that, of these pathological phenomena, if you say to yourself as you consider the matter, it is perfectly clear that the principle radiating from the system of kidneys and liver is blunted in a way, blunted as the sculpturing principle of the neurosensory human being, as the sculpturing principle of the neurosensory human being comes in. The dominant influence with the sculpturing principle is something connected with the human eye organization and astral organization, as referred to earlier in these lectures. You see, it is strange that earlier I had to say that the eye organization comes from the system of liver and gall, that the astral organization comes from the renal system, and that I now have to say that everything connected with the eye organization and the astral organization comes from the head organization. We'll never manage to cope with the enormous complexity of the human organization by just taking a linear approach, saying that the eye organization comes from the system of liver and gall, the astral organization from the system of liver and kidneys, and sticking with this. We have to realize that in the first stage of life, up to the second dentition, these principles radiating from the system of liver and kidneys are blunted by emanations from the neurosensory system, and that it is this blunting which matters. The emanations coming from the system of liver and gall and from the renal system, oddly enough, prove to be a counterflow, not directly moving up from below, but moving from above downward in a counterflow. The whole childhood organization really has to be imagined like this. The astral rays out from the renal system, the eye organization from the liver system. But these emanations are of no significance. Instead, the liver system is, as it were, reflected by the head system. The renal system is reflected by the head system. And it is only the reflection into the organism which shows itself to be the active principle. You therefore have to say to yourself, how do I look at the child's astral organization? I look at the actions coming from the kidney as they are reflected back by the head system. The actual physical system and the etheric system act upward from below. The physical organization with its point of origin in the digestive system, and the etheric organization in the system of heart and lungs, these act upward from below, and the others down from above, in the first stage of human life. And the rhythm which relates to the radiation from above downward in a ratio of 4 to 1, is acting into the radiation that goes upward from below. It is a pity that one has to be so brief, but this truly informs us on developments in childhood. If you want to study the most striking childhood diseases, these can be divided into two groups, and studying these you'll find that on the one hand, they are due to the principle radiating down from above, meeting the one radiating from below upward, in rhythms in a relationship of 4 to 1. But balance is not achieved. And if the principle with the 4 rhythm, radiating from below upward, does not want to be part of the nature of the individual, though the inherited rhythm of the head organization is really all right, the rhythm that is 1 in the ratio, then all the diseases develop which we know in the childhood organism, and which nevertheless are metabolic diseases. But these are metabolic diseases arising from a damming up against the neurosensory system, so that the metabolism cannot rightly adapt to the radiation coming from the neurosensory system, and we get, for example, I can only give examples, the strange blood disease in children, which makes the blood kind of purulent. We also come to all other childhood diseases that may be said to be metabolic diseases. If the metabolic organism is adapted to the child's individual nature, and above all if hygienic conditions are reasonable, so that the children are well adapted to their environment, that is, are given the right foods, but due to hereditary conditions of some kind, the neurosensory system, which acts downward from above, and the influences of which take the emanations from the system of liver and gall and the renal system along with them, is not in order, all the spasmodic diseases of childhood arise, of which we must say that they are due to the eye organization and astral organization, not being able to enter properly into the physical and etheric organization. The diseases of the childhood organism thus arise from two opposite sources. But it is always the case that we can only cope with these diseases in the child's organism by directing our attention to the head and the neurosensory organization. Basically, we must also configure the child's metabolism so that it adapts not only to external conditions, but also to the neurosensory organization. In that first stage of life, up to the second dentition, we need to develop thorough insight into the human neurosensory system, practical insight, and really see to it that everything radiates out from the head organization, except that the metabolism may put itself forward, being in good order, and the head organization being too weak from hereditary causes. In the second stage of life, from the second dentition to sexual maturity, everything radiates out from the rhythmic organism itself. And the human astral and the etheric organization is then of the essence. Everything the respiratory system and the circulatory system perform as their functions radiates into the astral and the etheric organization at that time. These systems can be kept in order from outside, and because of this, people are at their healthiest where their own organization is concerned. But we can easily ruin the health of primary school-age children by putting them in poor hygienic and sanitary conditions. We cannot really take care of them from outside in this way in the first stage of life. Knowing full well, having gained real insight into essential human nature, that basically we are responsible for the causes of disease which arise between the 7th and the 14th years of life, means that we carry enormous responsibility for the medical aspects of education. Genuine understanding of essential human nature tells us exactly that basically the causes for disease evident between the 7th and 14th years in life are our own fault. It is exactly at school age that human beings do not really depend on themselves, but adapt to their environment in their breathing, taking in air, something which metabolism brings to expression in the circulation. Metabolism is always connected with the organization of limbs. If we don't let the children do proper physical exercise, properly move their limbs, we breed causes of disease in outer terms. This gives us the basis for the study of a real proper primary school education. All conditions, also during lesson times, must be such that this is taken into account. You see, this is not done in our time. You may realize this if you consider the following. In experimental psychology, as it is called, which in a way is something magnificent, and I am well able to appreciate its importance, among the sins committed is the sin of saying, when children attend these lessons, they get so tired, and when they attend these other lessons, they tire in this other way, and so on. Conclusions are drawn from this as to how to arrange the curriculum, according to the states of tiredness observed. Well, the question is put in entirely the wrong way. It has to be put differently. From the 7th to the 14th year, we are, thank heaven, only dealing with a rhythmic human being, who in principle never tires. If it were to tire, the heart, for example, would not perform its movements when we sleep for the whole of our earthly life. The movements of breathing continue and never tire. So if someone says he must take account of serious or slight tiring observed in the experiment, he would have to conclude that he has really made an error when that happens. It must be our ideal not to influence primarily the head system between the 7th and the 14th year, but rather the rhythmic system. We do this by giving our education artistic form. That is how we influence the rhythmic system. And we shall find that we are actually correcting the things which modern research establishes as children tiring with the wrong kind of teaching. It is possible, for instance, to influence the breathing movements, albeit slightly, by wrongly burdening the memory, and this will show itself later on in life. The opposite is the case when the child has reached sexual maturity and after that. Then possible causes of disease appear in the human beings themselves, in their own organism of metabolism and limbs. This happens because the foods taken in make their own laws apply, and we then have the activity of the physical and etheric organism predominant in the human organization. In the child's organism, we thus have the eye organization and the astral organization acting via the neurosensory system. From the second dentition to sexual maturity, the astral and etheric organization is predominantly active, but from the rhythmic system. After sexual maturity, the physical organization and the etheric organization are mainly active, and this from the system of metabolism and limbs. And we see how pathology absolutely confirms this. I merely have to list the typical diseases for the female gender. We see how, after sexual maturity, the actual metabolic diseases come from within the human being, so that we are now able to say that metabolism predominates. It is the principle which, coming from the metabolism, overcomes the neurosensory organization instead of establishing real harmony with it. In a child, we have false dominance of the neurosensory system in childhood diseases before the second dentition. Then the period of health between the second dentition and sexual maturity. And after that, predominance of the organism of metabolism and limbs with its faster rhythm. This faster rhythm is then reflected in everything connected with deposits developing in the metabolism, simply because the sculpting organization from the head pushes itself forward, come what may. I'm very sorry indeed that I can only present these things cursorily and aphoristically. I do, however, want to give at least the main conclusions, which are that we can actually see from it all that the functional aspect of the human being must be considered primary, and that the development of form and deformation must basically be coming from this functional aspect. Outwardly, this is evident in that the plastic form-giving process is particularly powerful up to the seventh year. The organs are developed so far in their sculpted form by principles coming from the neurosensory system that we are able to say, for instance, that the work done in forming the teeth up to the second dentition will not be repeated later. But all the work done by the metabolism in penetrating the organism really enters onto a completely new track when, at sexual maturity, part of the metabolism is given over to the sexual organs, and the metabolism is altogether given a different constitution. It is extraordinarily important for you to follow up the things I have mentioned so briefly, doing so methodically and in every detail. The results are put in a proper scientific order by bringing them together with things like those I gave at the end of this morning's session, relating them in turn to world activities outside the human being. It is possible to deal with everything that radiates out in this complicated way from the renal system, the liver system, simply by provoking changes in there from the outside. We can deal with it by taking account of the things we observe in the plant's growth principle. I'd say more from the preceding year or years, and the growth principles arising from the immediate present. Let us go back to the plant. From the root up to the ovary, to seed development, we really have something that is old for the plant, from the year before. And in everything that develops, especially around the petals, we have the present. We have to see the combined activities of present and past in the development of the leaves. Past and present unite as two components producing a result. Now in nature, everything relates to everything else, just as everything relates to everything else in a complicated manner in the human organism, as I have shown briefly. We have to get to know the ways in which things are connected. Everything is mutual relationship in the natural world. And if we want to trace the relationships evident in the plant, where things are less complicated, we find the following. We find everything which in an earlier instinctive medicine, which we do not wish to return to, I merely want to mention it so that we understand each other, was called phosphorus-like, sulfur-like, in the parts developing as something belonging to the present, to today, in the flower, leaving aside the ovary and stigma. Making a tea from these parts of the plant, thus also taking out mineral activity, we get the phosphorus-like, the sulfur-like principle. It is quite wrong to think that those earlier physicians saw phosphorus and sulfur as the elements known to us in modern chemistry. No, they saw it in the way I have just described. A tea made accordingly from, say, red poppy petals would, in terms of that earlier medicine, be considered to be something phosphorus-like, sulfur-like. If I use the green leaves, on the other hand, a big difference, of course, if you take pine needles or cabbage leaves and make a decoction, you will have what in the old style was called mercurial. That is the mercurial principle, not mercury as we know it today. And everything connected with the root element, the stem and seed quality, was considered salt-like in the old medicine. I am merely mentioning this to make things clear. Today, with our natural scientific insights, we cannot pick up those earlier insights. But we do need to have experimental series to show how, on the one hand, let us say, a decoction of some root or other acts on the head organization, and therefore also on childhood diseases. We shall have a tremendously significant regulative principle if we simply do experiments on the actions of anything we obtain, especially from the root element, and also the seed element of plants on the childhood organization up to the second dentition. We will then have medicines for everything that is similar to the things that must be acquired from outside, essentially all diseases that are in the main acquired between the second dentition and sexual maturity have to be acquired from outside, that is, at least medicines that act on what is coming from outside by making preparations of the green leaves, the foliage. That is the mercurial in the earlier sense, and it is indeed present to a greater degree in mercury, though it is not identical with it. The fact that mercury is a specific for something very much acquired from outside, that is, for certain venereal diseases, is certainly connected with this. Everything by way of venereal diseases is essentially merely the potentized continuation of conditions that may develop in an extraordinarily mild form in the second stage of life. Yet by nature, even venereal diseases are merely a potentized form of what can be acquired from outside from the 7th to the 14th year, exactly up to sexual maturity. These do not turn into venereal diseases, because up to this age, people aren't yet sexually mature. Otherwise, various diseases that can potentially be acquired would offload themselves very much on the sexual organs. Someone truly able to observe this transition from the 11th, 12th, into the 13th, 14th, and as far as the 15th, 16th year, will see how something which before appeared in a completely different way takes the form of abnormalities in the sex life. And then, of course, come the human diseases that may have their principal seat in metabolism, insofar as the metabolism is bound up with the physical system and to the etheric system. Diseases that must be considered in connection with activities bound up with the principle that lies in the actual flowering parts of the plant. Much of this may seem sheer fantasy when it has to be as briefly presented as I had to do here, but they are verifiable in every detail. Our difficulties in really presenting these things in official medicine lie in the fact that initially it all seems difficult to see clearly, because we have to reckon with the kind of complication in the human organism which will have attracted your particular attention when I started to speak today. I had to characterize it in such a way that apparently it did not agree with the things said in the morning. The explanation is that emanations from the organization of liver and kidneys will first present in their counteractions. It is then something of importance for the eye organism and the astral organism. This comes up most powerfully there. In a similar way, however, the circulatory rhythm and the breathing rhythm work both together and against one another in the middle human being. There, too, we therefore have to look for some things that come from the blood rhythm, first in the counterstroke of the breathing rhythm, and vice versa. If you bring the things I am now saying together with the things I said this morning, for instance, that the human eye organization really lives in the human being of warmth, which then penetrates the human being of air, the gaseous human being, and if we consider an influence like that coming from the eye organism and from the astral organism, then in physical terms we have something which predominantly acts from the warmth organization and the gaseous in the aeriform organization. But we have to see this in the early childhood organism. We therefore have to see the origin of childhood diseases by studying the warmth organization and air organization, and the effects on the warmth organization and on the air organization, which we see if we now use preparations made from roots or seed arise, because two polar opposite modes of action impinge on one another, with the one exciting the other. Root or seed preparations we introduce into the organism excite everything that arises from the human warmth organization and from the air organization. This is merely to indicate how, if we consider the actions that go from above downward, as it were, have from the very beginning a warmth and air vibration established in human beings, which is strongest in childhood, though it is not a vibration, but an organic structure operating in time. And the actions going upward from below, in the physical and etheric organism, are the solid and the fluid organization. Both are in interaction because the fluid and the gaseous organizations interpenetrate in the middle, as it were, thus producing an intermediate stage in the states of aggregation. Thus the intermediate aggregate state, familiar to you, between solid and fluid in the human organism, results from interpenetration. In the same way, we must look for an intermediate stage between fluid and gaseous in the living, sentient human organism, and then again for an intermediate stage between gaseous and warmth quality. You see, everything which thus comes to expression in the physiology, I'd say, has its significance for pathology and therapy. I think you'll agree, as we consider the human being in all this complexity, that the situation is such that one organ system is all the time pouring its actions into the other organ system. If you now consider the whole organic effect that comes to expression in a sense organ, for instance, let us say mainly in the ear, the following is the case. The eye organization, astral organization, etheric and physical organization are acting together in a particular way so that the metabolism penetrates the neurosensory element, and this is made rhythmical through and through by the breathing process, insofar as it influences the organ of hearing, is fully organized, given rhythm by the blood rhythm, insofar as this enters into the organ of hearing. Every organ reflects in a particular relationship the situation I have tried to show you in a threefold and a fourfold way. The threefold human being, the fourfold organization to which I referred, to make it transparent to you. Ultimately, however, everything is in metamorphosis in the human being. What we see here in the region of the ear, for instance, why do we call it normal? Because it presents the way it does present so that the human being may arise, and arise in the way he goes about here on earth. There is no other reason for calling it normal. But when these special conditions, which in the case of the ear are above all configuring things, because the ear is in the periphery of the organism, act in such a way that, let us say, metamorphosis makes a similar relationship, similar interrelationship with all these different aspects that arise somewhere in the inner organism, arise instead of the interrelationships which are appropriate in that particular place. Something comes in just there which really wants to be an ear. Forgive me for being so sketchy, but one can't put the things I want to say in any different way when one has to be so sketchy. Let us say it comes up in the region of the pylorus instead of whatever was meant to develop there. In this way, a pathological metamorphosis proves to be the origin of tumor development. All tumor developments, including carcinoma, are, in fact, displaced attempts to develop sense organs. So if you have such a pathological development and rightly understand the human organism, you'll discover the degree of involvement of the warmth organism and the air organism in the child's organization, and indeed the embryonic organization, to let those organs develop. They can only develop in the right way through the warmth and air organism, in that the fluid organism and the solid organism counteract them, and a resultant arises of components. This means that we need not consider this relationship between physical organism, insofar as it comes to expression, for instance, through the metabolism, and the sculpting, form-giving organism, insofar as it comes to expression, in the neurosensory system. We have to see, as it were, how the principle which carries matter radially emanates from the metabolic organism, and how matter is sculpted, given form, in the organs by the principle coming toward it from the neurosensory system. Considering this, we ask ourselves how we can really get at such a tumor development. We can only do so by saying to ourselves, the relationship is not right between the physical and etheric organism on the one hand, insofar as it is reflected in the emanating metabolism, and the eye organism and the astral organism on the other, as they are reflected in the warmth organism and in the air organism. In thus referring to the outermost limits, we must above all consider the way in which the metabolism relates to the warmth organism. In the case of a tumor, we can best do this if it is inside, though it is also possible if outside. I'll talk about these things tomorrow, particularly in the therapeutic part, by enveloping the tumor in a mantle of warmth. We merely have to succeed in enveloping the tumor in a mantle of warmth. This causes a radical change in the whole organization. If we succeed in doing this, then, put in a primitive way, we will also succeed in dissolving it. This is achieved in a real way, if such medicines are used appropriately. I am sure, as your medical friends have told you about, if they are given by injection. Having discovered the specific action on one organ system or another, you can be sure that in every case, a viscum preparation, the way we use it, will create a mantle of warmth around the abnormal organ in question, for that is what a carcinoma is. You cannot use the same for a breast cancer, a cancer of the uterus, or of the pylorus. You have to study the route taken by the effect produced by the injection, but you'll never achieve anything unless you bring about a genuine effect. And this effect becomes evident in that the temperature rises. The injection thus has to be followed by a febrile state. You can be sure of failure from the beginning if you do not produce a fever. I wanted to give you the principle so that you may see how things depend on a ratio, but that ratio should only be a regulative principle. You will see that everything said to be due to those regulative principles can be verified in the way in which facts are altogether verified in modern medicine. Nor do we wish to claim that these things should simply be accepted without being verified. But the situation is that anyone who takes a real interest in these things will be able to make strange discoveries. Everything I have been saying today, the sketchy presentation may prove somewhat confusing, but it will be clear if you give the matter some thought. You will, on the one hand, find substantiated, in a strange way, if you take the right facts on the one side, which are recorded in the literature, these things are recorded somewhere or other, which will truly bring you close to the picture painted today, especially if you relate this to something else, if you relate it to the many references to be found in the literature. You will get as far as this, but no further. You will thus certainly find confirmation from two sides in existing medicine, that the result is as I have sketched it out for you. I'll now permit myself to add some aspects of treatment tomorrow, and then some of the things which perhaps are not quite clear because of today's sketchy presentation will become clearer. The end of Lecture 7.